Express yourself. Express yourself. You don't never need help from nobody else. All you got to do now, express yourself. Whatever you do, do it good. Whatever you do, 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 Lord, Lord.
All right, and welcome to Express Yourself here on KD&K Radio. Express Yourself airs every Friday from 4 to 5 p.m., brought to you by the Carbondale Creative District, preserving the creative ethos of Carbondale through advocacy, support, and action. I'm one of your hosts today, Brian Colley, and I'm joined, of course, by my lovely co-host, the one, the only,
Amy Kimberly. And here on Express Yourself, we feature all things culture and creativity in and around the Roaring Fork Valley, from visual artists and makers to performing artists and musicians, and so much more. Well, here's what's coming up on today's show.
That's right. A little later, be sure to stick around for an update on all things First Friday. Yes, that is next week. It is still January today. But February starts tomorrow, and there are so many fun community vibes in store for all you Carbondalians next week.
That's right, and towards the end of today's show, we're in for a special visit from the Willy Wonka of the Roaring Fork Valley, Mark Burrows of Carbondale's very own Coco Club. Listen in as we, that's you and me, Brian, and Tony, yes, if you'd like to stay, we get to test some of the newest chocolate confections just in time for Valentine's Day.
There you go. But first, we have special guest here all the way from Denver, Colorado. Artist and educator Tony Ortega is back and in town getting ready for a solo show at the Art Base in Basalt starting next Friday. And by the way, if you're over at the Art Base this evening, be sure to stop by the closing party for Raina Katzenberger's interactive installation of Art and Process up from 5 to 7 p.m. tonight. All that and more coming up here on Express Yourself. So
don't touch that dial.
All right. Here we are. Tony Ortega's in the house. Hi, Tony.
Hey, Brian. How you doing?
Good. Good to see you again. You have a solo exhibition, like I mentioned, coming to the Art Base in Basalt. The dates of that show, February 7th through March 7th. And I think you just told me the opening reception is February.
Yeah, the opening reception is February 14th.
Right.
And actually, they've extended the show. It runs through March 14th.
Oh, great. More Tony Ortega time is always great. Your show is called, and Spanish is coming to me here, Imágenes de Nepantla.
Is that correct? That's correct.
And I have a quick bio that I found on your website. I'd love to just read for people who don't know you that well. But Tony Ortega holds an MFA in drawing and painting from the University of Colorado, currently a professor at Regis University. He's been a working artist and teacher for the past 40 years. Tony's lifelong goal is to contribute to a better understanding of cultural diversity by addressing the culture, history, and experiences of Chicanos and Latinos through his art. Tony's artwork can be found in the collections of the Denver Art Museum, the Los Angeles County Museum, and the Colorado Springs Fine Arts Center. He's extensively exhibited through the United States, Latin America, and other parts of the world. Tony's artwork can be found in Denver, Colorado, at the William Havu Gallery. Is that right?
That's correct.
Well, I'm just excited to welcome you back to the Roaring Fork Valley, and I love having this connection with artists like you on the Front Range. I'm just happy to have you back here at KD&K as well. So
it's great to see you and reconnect.
Yeah. I'm also excited to see your works in this upcoming show at the Art Base starting next Friday. And just want you to tell us what you've been working on and maybe a little bit more about this title of the new exhibition, Imágenes de Nepantla.
Yeah. Well, that just easily translates into Images of Nepantla. Nepantla is a Nahua word. Nahua is the language of the Mexica, or what we call the Aztecs. Hmm. And it means between two spaces or two places. So the way I sort of translate that is being Mexican-American and being aware of the culture that you come from, but also living within the context of an American culture, that space in between. It's space between being American but being of Mexican descent. Hmm. That's what I'm making reference to.
How did you discover that word? Just through research?
Actually, my son and I made a trip up to Seattle summer before last. Hmm. And while we were there, we visited a local Chicano art gallery, and it was called Nepantla.
Oh, wow.
And we talked with the director there, and he gave us a simple definition. We looked around at the shop. I've even shown my work there since then.
Oh, great.
But that's where I discovered the word. Then I started doing some research online and doing some reading and looking at some other things and other relationships. It's been more directed towards literature by Mexican Americans or even Mexicanos.
Mm-hmm.
But I think more visual artists are sort of taking on or realizing that they too exist or live in or feel like they're in Nepantla.
Yeah. So kind of like an in-between state. Where you're not quite this and you're not quite that, but you're living in that kind of, I don't know, that hybrid space.
Right.
In between. That's really interesting.
Yeah, it's like if you think of Mexican-American, if it's hyphenate, it's that hyphen in between the two words.
The hyphen. Yeah.
But I think it's a very universal word. I think people could see it through identity, sexuality, through culture, through traditions. But I'm using it more through culture. That's the way I'm using it.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure you've experienced that kind of in-betweenness throughout your life as a Chicano Latino artist. And I was wondering if you could share any examples, specific or not, just how simply existing in that, I guess, that hyphen, that not quite belonging, how has that affected your day-to-day life? You grew up in the U.S., is that right?
Yeah, I was born in New Mexico. Mm-hmm. My family, or my mother's side of the family, is from Pecos, New Mexico. My dad's side is from Colonias, even a smaller community. It's about 25 miles outside of Santa Fe.
Okay.
And the best way for me to describe Nepantla is basically when I was little, when I would go to New Mexico and spend the summers with my maternal grandmother. Spanish was the dominant language. We were Roman Catholic. It was very rural, very agricultural. There was a lot of animals. And then I would come back to Denver, which was very urban, very big. English was spoken, a lot of American food, or actually a variety of food.
Mm-hmm.
So I always felt like the Mexican side of me was from New Mexico, and the American side of me was from Denver. That's a little simplistic, but that's kind of a way to think about it.
Yeah.
And that mixing is sort of what has informed me as an individual, but it's informed me as an artist.
How would you say you found your way through navigating that as an artist, and how has it affected your work? I mean, I know this show is specifically about that concept of the in-between, Nepantla, but how do you think that kind of started working its way? I mean, I think maybe that's just like your life, right? You're just painting from your experience.
It can be disoriented sometimes. Sometimes you don't feel quite American enough because sometimes I had problems with reading when I was a child, and my English would sort of be kind of funny, or some people would laugh. And sometimes my Spanish wasn't always like somebody from Mexico or from a Spanish-speaking country. So it was always like, where do I fit? Where don't I fit? So
interesting.
Nepantla is where I think I fit best, sort of navigating between the two cultures, the two languages, the different traditions.
Yeah, yeah. I wonder if you would be able to share maybe just to describe one or two of the artworks in this exhibition. I know you're a traditional printmaker, but you also stretch the envelope on all kinds of things that you do. Can you kind of describe for the listeners who may not be familiar with your work, maybe one or two pieces
sure.
on this show?
First of all, I'll direct you to my website, tonyortega.net.
Excellent.
But I work in a variety of media. I'm a printmaker. I'm also a painter. I also have done a little bit of photography, a little bit of video. But I think most of my focus is pastels, acrylics, and printmaking. You'll see some wood blocks. You'll see some etchings. You'll see some monotypes. I brought up some pastels. There's some acrylics, which actually they're more mixed media. But you'll see a full range of the work that I create.
Excellent. What about just one or two specific pieces?
Sure. I think one piece that I think about, I have a piece of that I call Super Hombre.
Ah, yes. I love Super Hombre.
And Super Hombre, if you look at the American version of Superman, he wears red, white, and blue, which are the colors of the American flag. He's flying over a skyscraper, and he's Caucasian, right? And he's there to protect and serve the American people, right? Well, my Super Hombre is dark complected, has a bigote or a mustache. Mm. He has the colors of the Mexican flag. And then he is flying over a pyramid in Mexico. Mm-hmm. So again, I'm using what I call hybridity, where I'm bringing elements or symbols from the two different cultures and mixing them in an etching.
Wow.
Another one will be one that I did with Lupe Liberty. So I took Our Lady of Guadalupe and mixed it with the Statue of Liberty, and then all of a sudden I have Lupe Liberty. So I do the mixing through Photoshop. Sometimes I appropriate images, sometimes use drawings, sometimes use previous work, and then I mix them together. Then I'll create a film positive, and then I use these solar plates that are light sensitive, and I put a film positive on top of it, expose it to UV light.
Wow.
And then wherever the light passed through, the plate gets hard. Wherever light doesn't pass through, remains soft and water soluble. And then when you wash out the plate, instead of putting it in acid, the water makes the valleys or the grooves of the plate. And then I'll go back to a more traditional way of printmaking where you put the ink into the valleys, wipe the surface, put a piece of paper on top of it, and run it through the press, and it transfers the image onto the paper.
Wow. So many steps. Yeah, there's so many different kinds of printmaking. I'm always learning so many things. I've done some traditional like relief in printmaking where you just carve away the negative spaces or the paper when it's printed. But you've done just so many. How long have you been doing printmaking and this kind of work?
Oh, well, I went to art school when I was early to mid-20s to Rocky Mountain School of Art in Denver. Mm-hmm. It's now called Rocky Mountain College of Art and Design. Mm-hmm. And I started printmaking there. We started doing very traditional printmaking. We did aquatint on zinc plates. Wow. We did some hard ground on zinc plates. We used hydrochloric acid, I believe. I hope I had that right. Wow. Some soft ground. So very traditional. The acid baths had to be well ventilated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
They had to be careful with the toxicity of some of the ingredients. Mm-hmm. The solar plates that I use are greener, so they're more environmentally friendly. They're friendlier to the body, friendlier to the environment, etc.
That makes sense.
So, and then I can, because they are solar plates or light sensitive plates, I can incorporate drawings, photography, digital imaging, or any artist who works and make a plate and thus can make an addition or just make some prints.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that actually, because with adding those extra elements of photography and you go back and hand embellish sometimes with pastel and other paint, is there any medium that speaks, more closely to your heart? I know for me, printmaking is up there just because of the immediacy and mass production. I don't know what it is about printmaking, but if there was something that spoke to you as like the Tony Ortega like style, and what do you go to usually?
Initially grounded me in the media was pastels, and I liked working on a black paper or toned paper. Mm-hmm. I like simplifying or abstracting, and then I would do images of what I called genre scenes or images of community, family, groupings, gathering places. And then my work sort of grew from that. That influenced my monotypes, which influenced other printmaking, which also influenced my mural making, the community mural making that I do.
That's right.
And I guess one of the reasons I like working in a variety of media is I like being challenged, trying something new, trying something different. I like experimenting.
Sure.
So that's a reason why I work in a variety of media.
Yeah. When you said mural, I remembered again that you have a mural in Carbondale.
I do.
If people don't remember that. Were you part of that, Amy?
Yes.
turn your
mic. Yes, I was. Well, yeah. I was being quiet. But yes, yes, we did that.
What year was that? Do you remember?
Wow.
I think it was 2009, maybe the summer of 2009. We worked here in the local park over here.
At the park, yeah.
And there was like, I think there's a stage there. We were mm-hmm. on the stage. Mm-hmm. I had some young high school kids, I think two or three that were my assistants. And we rotated kids in and out, so I think five or six at a time. And everybody helped with the undercolor or the hard edge, worked with the dry brush and then some pointillism. Mm-hmm. And I kept the mark making simple so that you didn't have to have years and years mm-hmm. of experience with
right.
painting.
Well, that's so you're a good educator in that
way. And it hangs in the Third Street Center, and
correct.
It looks great. I just was looking at it yesterday.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was there looking at it maybe a couple summers ago, and it's held up really well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I just threw that out there. But back to your show, Imágenes de Napantla, what are some things that you're hoping visitors will take away with them once they see this show?
I think hopefully once there's a statement, once they read the statement and walk through the art, maybe they begin to realize what Napantla means. Mm-hmm. Maybe they've experienced mm-hmm. a feeling of being in between mm-hmm. or not fitting into one identity or the other or one culture or another or one mm-hmm. one situation or another. So, you know, I think it's, even though it's a Nahua word, Mexica, it's got a universal theme or feeling, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's an old, old word, but it's very relevant to today's world,
mm-hmm.
like more and more relevant as we keep going. And real quick, I know you have the opening reception is February 14th.
Yeah, it's from 5 to 7 p.m., and then there'll be an artist talk. Mm-hmm. I think that starts at 6. I don't know if I have that exactly right, but I think it's around 6. And I'll be walking around the gallery talking to people about individual pieces, technique, ideas. You can come and ask me questions.
Great.
And then on March 14th, the show will be closed, but I'll be doing a workshop with kids. I'll be doing a workshop with what we call alebrijes.
If
anybody's ever seen the movie Coco,
yeah,
there's alebrijes. So alebrijes are these fantastic exotic animals, right?
Wow.
But I do kind of a variation of it. We use recycled material.
Mm-hmm.
And then glue them together, and that makes the armature. Then we paper mache over that,
wow.
and then we paint and embellish them. And I'll use strawberry containers, toilet paper rolls, corrugated cardboard, egg cartons, mm-hmm. anything that you could recycle. Just think about it, and then glue them together with hot glue guns. And then if you can just think of the animalitos that come, or the alebrijes from Oaxaca.
You were just in Oaxaca.
Yeah, we're just in Oaxaca. We actually went to Manuel Jimenez's house in Xochoclo.
Wow.
And he was kind of the father of alebrijes. They actually do the carved wood there.
Mm-hmm.
Pablo Linares from Mexico City did the paper mache, but they look very similar. Just the materials are a little different.
No, they're gorgeous. And what, remind me the story behind alebrijes? Why do people create those?
Pablo Linares, I think, was ill back in the 30s or 40s.
Okay,
and he was suffering from fever, and he had these dreams, and he already came from a family of making paper mache objects.
Huh.
So in these dreams during his fever, he sort of visualized these images. And when he got well and got better, he started making them.
Huh.
But if you look at the movie Coco, the alebrijes is what helps you take you to the afterlife, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I've heard that.
Yeah.
Yeah, we use them we have a big Dia de los Muertos celebration here. And so there's a lot. So we're going to have to connect with these kids that are making all these.
You sure it's just a workshop for kids, though?
I've taught adults this workshop, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe we need to come. Have you come back? That's really,
that sounds really
great.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, Tony Ortega, thank you so much for being here in Carbondale.
Sure. Well, thank you.
Ahead of your show at the Art Base in Basalt. Again, tonight there's a closing reception with Raina Katzenberger's show, Art and Process, 5 to 7. But don't miss Tony Ortega's show, Imágenes de Napantla.
Hope you could make it.
Thanks, Tony.
Casa Pedro y yo no. no sé por qué. Las calles que yo piso me quieren comer. Estoy encaramado y yo no sé qué hacer. Desde las alturas no puedo ver. No tengo país, no tengo pasado. Porque vivo en el en medio. No tengo respuestas, no tengo un destino. No tengo la clave porque vivo en el en medio. Mis manos ya no tienen miedo, mi voz ya no tiene miedo. Mi miedo ya no tiene miedo de vivir en el en medio. No tiene miedo, mi madre ya no tiene miedo, mi alma ya no tiene miedo, mi miedo ya no tiene miedo.
We're back on Express Yourself. Thanks for tuning in to us on KDNK. We've got a next interview in the house. No stranger to
you.
KDNK. Stranger to me. Deborah Colley in the house, a.k.a. Brian's sister.
Hi.
Hi.
It's good to be here. Thanks for having me on.
If you don't know Deborah, she's here on KDNK, what, at least once or twice a month?
Once a month right now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You've got a show called...
Your Next Tattoo, and I'm Radio Rose. I just gave myself away.
Ah. Oh, is that not a thing that DJs do?
Some
they don't.
They
say like their real name and their DJ name.
I don't know.
But you're here today on behalf of Carbondale Arts and the Carbondale Creative District. You've also been involved with Carbondale Arts for many, many years, and your past role as operations manager, you were there for like 7 years, I think, until 2018.
Mm-hmm.
And then Amy was the director of Carbondale Arts.
She was my boss.
Boss lady.
But I'm the pantla now.
What does that mean?
La
pantla.
The in-between.
La pantla.
Ah.
The in-between.
Oh.
Aren't we all, yeah.
I love that word. I'm going to be using it.
Yeah. That's a
good
one.
And Deb helped, jumped on the fashion show, and there's a lot of things. So many layers. We're going
to
peel them back.
Yeah, I'm an onion, baby. Stinky.
And not to mention the mountain bear.
And I'll make you cry.
Whoa.
Just kidding. This is Express Yourself.
We're getting
yourself.
Deep now.
Deborah's expressing herself. That's good. Mm-hmm. This is what we're here for. It's like we should have a couch in this studio.
We could. Charge more.
You're also, I don't want to forget, you're the Mountain Fair Operations and Logistics Director. You work closely with Amy here, who directed Mountain Fair for 18 years, I think.
19.
Oh, ooh, wow. We're all there close.
So, Nepantla in between.
Nepantla was the hyphen.
Let's see. And you're back. You're back in a role at Carbondale Arts now. What's your official title? Because I couldn't figure that out. I should have texted you.
Well, for the purposes of everyone understanding on air, I'm helping out with First Fridays. It's kind of a First Fridays communications lead.
Perfect.
An events coordinator. But I work with all the other staff in the office. So I'm helping out specifically with First Fridays. I'm helping out with leveraging gallery events and
supplementary
and
things.
I think we're figuring it out a little bit as we go because there's so many.
She's filling the holes.
I'm filling
holes.
Where
there's a hole. She's the hole filler.
Lapantla.
I was going to say hyphen, but then that's in okay, between. So I thought, you know, we need a new word for you.
I'm like a glue stick.
Oh, okay. There you go.
Yeah. Okay. The glue. Well,
GS for sure.
And I did have a question on here. It's not too how's the reentry into the Carbondale Arts office life after more than years away after, you know?
I didn't realize this was a personal interview.
Well, you know.
Yeah.
We could talk about
He's
first
curious.
Friday if you want
He's
to
curious. He hasn't
in.
Been able to tell. So.
Yeah. I didn't want to ask you at home. I thought I could just bring you on live radio and interview you.
Yeah. Put you on the spot.
Gosh. It's so fun, actually, to come back and be part of the Carbondale Arts staff. Yeah. It's like at first I was like, ooh, boy, I'm having some deja vu. Because as many people know, when they come in to visit the Launchpad in Carbondale Arts, that office is tiny and they're in a fishbowl and there's always more to do and attend to than because we have an enormous imagination over there at Carbondale Arts of what we could pull off. And I think we generally do pull it off.
Yeah. But now we have the glue, the secret.
Mm-hmm.
The GS.
The GS.
And what kinds of things are you excited about coming up?
This is my segue.
This
is my segue to this coming First Friday.
For success.
Well, last year, Carbondale Arts took on First Friday as kind of like the spearhead, the lead community organizer for all the businesses that participate in First Friday and all the partners, including like the town of Carbondale and the mm-hmm. chamber and... Mm-hmm. And so last year, I feel like that was a year of learning and figuring out how it all works. And
right.
This year, I think we're taking the things that were learned and, we're trying to kind of grow into some bigger visions of connectivity and
love that.
Really finding myself using this word activation that I first learned from Amy. But I thought, what does that mean, activations? But like really leaning into what it means to activate a space, which I'm starting to understand really is more like bringing lots of energy through different partners and activities to a space so that we have a greater sense of community. And so I think that's the vision for 2025 First Fridays, working with all of our partners up and down Main Street to activate our Main Street spaces and get people in town and engaging with businesses and connecting. It's such a First Friday is such a beautiful, community wide beloved event. Like it's just part of our natural like community cadence to the month. And to just keep feeding it and breathing special creativity and love into it. That's the vision. And this coming.
So what's happening?
Yeah. So this next First Friday.
Which is not today. Today is still January.
They're breeding lots of love into this next
Friday.
Yes,
because this next First Friday. Well, so I think historically this next First Friday, the February First Friday, the theme has been Mardi Gras.
Back in the day. It hasn't been for, maybe it's lost its luster a little while.
Or it's been forgotten, or people aren't as enthusiastic. So we were thinking that we would, instead of just letting it be a kind of a blah month, we were like, well, you know, we still want to like kind of give it some
love.
And so the theme is spread the love, because the next week is Valentine's Day, and also it feels like a really poignant time to be thinking about love and kindness and that sort of mood. And really that's just a theme. It's a February First Friday, and so the whole Main Street won't be closed, but we'll still have the Fourth and Main streets right next to Chaco's Park closed off with a food truck. And weather permitting, there will be ice skating.
A DJ, I believe.
And Katie and Kay is going to bring a couple live DJs down from four live DJs.
Yes, I saw the newsletter today. Four. They're playing from four to seven.
Serenade is playing.
Oh, cool. And there'll be a bonfire and there'll be hot chocolate. And the Boom Boo food truck, which is like Asian fusion food truck, will be down there. And I bet, though I haven't confirmed, that there'll be a food truck right outside of Main Street Liquor.
Yes, seems to be consistent.
I was hoping to confirm that today, but I haven't pinned down that.
Do we get to write love notes?
Okay, so here's what's
the juicy part.
Here's the juicy bit.
Yeah.
So we're setting up love note creation stations. There'll be one at the launch pad, and I'll talk about what's going on at the launch pad in a second. There'll be one at the launch pad from 5 to 7. There'll be one, a mini one at the Crow and Key, and we'll probably have a mini one out on 4th of Main, too, if the weather's, like, not blustery and snowy.
Okay.
And so at each Love Note... Oh, and also all day at True Nature, there'll also be a Love Note creation station, but theirs will be closing at 4. So after 4, you'll have to go to the launch pad at the Crow and Key or to 4th and Main. And there we'll have, like, little heart-shaped notes or pieces of paper where we're inviting the community to come write a love note. And it could be to anyone. It could be to no one in particular. It could be to your secret crush that you saw at City Market and they were reaching out to touch a sweet potato at the same time that you were, but you don't know their name. Misconnection. It could be to Mount Sopris. It could be to a loved one. The sky's the limit. You can sign it. You can leave it anonymous. And then we're inviting everyone to post them all together in that red phone booth that sits out on 4th and Main. And then on the week following, the week of Valentine's Day, Katie and Kay is going to take a select few and read a bunch of them on air. So that's like how we're spreading the love through the airwaves.
Yeah, I love that.
So I love that. We hope folks come out and participate in that. And at the launch pad, in addition to the Love Note creation station, there's going to be a We Heart Art pop-up, which you know a little bit about because you're the gallery.
the you guys think manager. We Heart Art is pretty clever. I came up with that myself. if you haven't been to the gallery yet, we have in the launch pad, Carbondale Arts Gallery showcases the 46th annual Valley Visual Arts Show. There's over 60 artists, and 9 of those artists are participating in kind of a pop-up arts and crafty kind of thing in the open studio there. So I was just going to read their names so you can kind of get familiar with Debbie Bender. Russ Criswell is going to have some wood coasters and funky trivets, he says. Alyssa Davies, Clarissa Fortier, Shayla Hain, Dion Holt, Hudson McNamee, who's actually got some amazing like wood, like furniture things, but he's got some bowls and things. Carla Reed, down in Rifle, she's going to have some amazing paintings, some originals, some prints. And Jill Scher, we all know Jill's felted work. She's going to have some scarves and some hats to keep you warm. Mm-hmm. So all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, and then there'll be a few like Valentine's Day type gifts in stock at the Artique. And so, you know, don't forget Valentine's Day. It's just a couple weeks away.
Kind of sneaks up, right?
Yeah, and whether or not you celebrate that romantically, it's such a fun holiday to actually get all lovey and grateful for the people who are special in your life. So,
and it's on Friday, so you can just go all out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you better be ready to party and something.
And there's so many businesses up and down Main Street that'll be staying open a little bit later for First Friday. And we're looking forward to it.
Woo.
Oh, and did you guys already talk about the gallery opening, the opening reception at the Clay Center?
Oh, no.
There's
an
opening reception at the Clay Center that night, too. Right.
Yep. I forgot about that. Thank you. I think it's some photographs of a ceramic artist who lives in Mexico.
Yes.
And I don't have that info in front of me, but definitely worth checking out because we love the Clay Center.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for all you guys do.
Is there anything? Oh, and also at the launch pad, we're bouncing back to the launch pad.
Oh.
Boink.
the cello player.
We're going to have a live cello player, and it's... I think Latauro
Madewell,
mm-hmm. who's an eighth grader at, maybe an eighth grader. I think it's he's an eighth grader at
Carbondale Communities?
No, at the Waldorf School.
That's great.
Nice.
Yeah.
And,
they're going to be set up in the gallery playing cello music, which is the themes of the cello music I've heard is soft rock
and movie themes.
Yeah.
Wow. Getting yeah.
I know. It's gonna be great.
So there's you know, for a February 1st Friday, there's so much great stuff going on, and we are playing it a little bit by ear with the ice skating. If it's too cold or if it's too warm, there won't be ice skating, but there'll be plenty of good hangout zones out there, with especially with Katie and Kay DJing, and it's gonna be a really fun evening.
Fun.
So come on out. Amy, do you have any like hilarious memories of Mardi Gras First Fridays to share?
Did they do like a parade?
Yeah.
Yeah, we used to do a really big parade.
Yeah,
and
huge.
A lot of people would create floats. Rosie Bell was in many a Mardi Gras parade.
Did we throw beans?
Oh yeah. We had hundreds of beads.
I can't remember any
and
of this.
You know, the problem was it wasn't always really Mardi Gras. We were like a little premature. Mardi Gras happened earlier in the month. It kind of worked.
Uh-huh.
But often Mardi Gras was way later. So we didn't quite have the oomph of the. But we did have fun times on the bus. And I can't remember if we had a king and queen. I think we might have. I think it's much better that we don't try to. It's hard when you're celebrating something that's not actually happening around the time that you're celebrating
it. Yeah.
So I like this. Love is, you know, you always know the 14th is going to be Valentine's Day.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, I like what this love note activation is for this time that we're experiencing right now. I think it can be really meaningful. And those love notes will stay up in the phone booth a full week before Valentine's Day, so folks can stop by. And
that's cool. Yeah, it's cool. And I think Katie and Kane, they may still do this because we did it with Light the Night with Love.
Mm-hmm.
You could call in as well to Katie and Kane and leave a love message.
Oh, I don't think they're doing that.
Are they
right
not
now.
Doing that?
I think that's how we came at the agreement that we would do this.
Yeah. So it's kind of a continuation of that, put it that way, but in a different form, which is so cool.
Yeah. So come on out.
Yeah.
All ye community members and join us.
They usually do.
I know. I know. It's so great.
Do people not come out on First Fridays?
I mean, I've been known to hermit.
Okay. You, but.
Yes. I've been known to.
You will not be hermiting anymore.
If it's cold out there.
Not on First Fridays.
I feel like if there's Katie and Kay DJs out there outside, like you can be outside. If there's DJs DJing.
Yeah, you guys.
And you can write a love note to the DJ and say thank you.
Yeah, you could write a love note to the DJs.
Thanks for keeping me warm with your music.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
You could start a dance party.
Thanks for
Pants
off, dance off. On Main Street. I don't know how everyone's going to feel about that.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for being here, Deborah.
Thanks for having me
on. Thanks, Radio Rose.
And people can find all things. Every month there's going to be something going on.
Yeah.
I mean, this is not just this month.
No, every month.
Every month you can find out what's going on where?
The Carbondale Arts page, carbondalearts.com, and then under the Creative Districts on First Friday. And also there is a Facebook page. It's the First Friday's Carbondale page, which should be more active than it ever has before as we start making plans.
Amping up.
So stay tuned.
Yay.
Thanks, Deborah.
Thank you.
Happy Friday.
Happy Friday.
Sitting on the front porch, ice cream in my hand, melting in the sun, all that chocolate on my tongue, and that's good enough reason to live. Good enough reason to live. Sitting in the bathtub, high five playing low, digging old Al Green, well, you must know what I mean. And that's good enough reason to live. good enough reason to live. If I die young, at least I got some chocolate on my tongue. If I die young, at least I got some chocolate on my tongue.
Ooh, we are going to have some chocolate on our tongue really soon. I am so excited. We are here in the studio with Mark Burrows, otherwise known as Carbondale's Willy Wonka, I guess.
That's right.
He is the owner-operator visionary of Pollinator Chocolate. That's located right on Highway 133 here in Carbondale, but you can find them throughout Colorado, huh?
Yeah, really all over the Rocky Mountain region, California, some back east.
Wow.
I've had stores as high as Anchorage.
Wow.
Carry me.
Know that.
So yeah, it's probably 30 or 40 different venues around. Botanical Gardens in Denver, Butterfly Pavilion in Denver are two of my bigger clients. Love being there.
Oh my goodness. Wow. And he has brought us a beautiful array of goodies for us to taste, because, you know, that thing called Valentine's Day is coming up.
I hear it's a pretty big holiday.
I hear people pretty like to give chocolate.
Yes, it's actually, that's our D-Day.
That's your D-Day?
Yeah,
that's bigger than Christmas?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Wow.
Yeah, fewer explosions. But it's definitely, it's for 2 days. There's a line out the door. We go through thousands and thousands and thousands of bonbons. That's when people come in. They're buying a box of 9 or a box of 15 or 30, and they're gifting to their loved ones, or house parties or housewarmings, or you name it, anniversaries.
Right.
Like, we go through so many bonbons. And those 2 days, everything just kind of explodes. It's all hands on deck.
How are you
sure.
preparing for that right now? Are you starting?
We started right after Christmas.
Wow.
Christmas kind of wiped us out of a lot of things. And right after Christmas, we started building our bonbon collection back up, because we know it's going to go pretty close to zero. So we've got thousands in stock right now.
And we've got some really beautiful ones I want to show our listener audience, but instead I will describe some of these incredible chocolates. I mean, right now I am looking at two lips,
two.
And we've got like
three.
Yeah, we've got what kind is the purple flavor?
There's three different kinds of cheesecake.
I'm
an idiot and forgot to bring my little flavor chart with me. You'll have to bite into it and tell me what you think.
Okay, we're going to.
So there's three different colors. There's a pink, a red, and a purple lips. And this cheesecake, super delicious.
Cheesecake. I'm taking the bright red because that's my color.
Purple.
Okay, Brian's got purple. You don't want to bite into it. Do you get sick of eating chocolate?
No, but you go to town.
Okay,
I want you to have all the fun. I get to have chocolate fun every day.
Mm.
Whoa, there's more than that in there.
Yeah, my chocolatier is kind of insane. She insists on doing multiple layers.
Oh my God.
So it's not just like filled with one thing. There's usually two or three things.
Well, you got one. Oh, okay. You had like a,
is that like a raspberry?
Jelly raspberry.
Yum.
I have, is it coconut?
Could be. It's cheesecake. I'm sorry. I'm not.
It's like a cheesecake, chocolate.
It's whatever you want it to be, Amy.
It's really good. Whatever it is.
Yes, it's whatever you want it to be.
White cheese-like stuff in here and some beautiful crunchy chocolate.
Those flavors go really well.
They do.
You guys are masters.
Yeah. And my lips are red now from eating.
Yes. It's, why bother with lipstick?
Did you eat the whole thing? We got a lot of chocolate to eat here. Okay.
I forgot.
Then we
Brian's
also
lips
have
know no bounds.
Now these, very curious about these. We have, they look like they're a little rounded.
There's many names for them. Tatas.
What do you call them? Tatas?
Would be one name.
They're very
sexy. My favorite nickname for Brian is Booby.
Yeah. Yep, there you go.
We could call them.
And you have pink tatas and chocolate tatas.
Yeah, more of the a different skin tone.
And they're pierced. Looks yes. Like.
I know. They got the pierced nipple going. It's so nice.
Yep. And those are, they're both the same flavor inside. It's a dulce de leche.
Oh, really?
Oh, okay. So chocolate or pink, wow, it's still the same.
Yep. It's all the same on the inside.
Okay, we're going to taste this, right. Audience. You are tuned in to KDNK. This is Express Yourself, and we are doing a chocolate tasting to get ready for Valentine's. We're looking at all these beautiful pollinator chocolates.
We just put out all of our Valentine's chocolates this afternoon.
Mm.
So you can come by now and see them all in all their glory in our display case.
Yeah, that dulce de leche coming through. Really nice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a good flavor.
Can you tell us who kind of is on your chocolatiering team right now over there at the Cocoa Club?
Yeah, we have three people working the chocolatier like full time. Jewel Lorado is our main chocolatier. She's the brains behind all the flavors, the painting of the bonbons, making of all the truffles, all the caramels. She is in charge of all that. So she comes up with all the flavor characteristics and just brings me one every now and then. It's like, what do you think of this? So I get to taste them all right away and I give my yes or no, or we can add something or take it away.
She's an artist.
But for the most part, she's spot on.
Yeah.
And she's very, very impressive in all the things that she's been pushing out. She has an assistant, Autumn, that works with her. She's got a small child, so she comes in part-time probably.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've got another gentleman, Mark, who's came from the East Coast to spend a couple of months with us.
Wow. Great. Nice. He's like interning.
Yes, essentially interning on our Bonbon team. He helps in all the production. Though between the three of them, we're managing to push out a lot of bonbons because we'll need a lot for Valentine's Day.
So, what are some of the flavors right now that are out? Can you remember them?
Oh yeah, well we have a lot of our classic ones that we've been doing for a long time, like our cherry chili, balsamic fig and vinegar.
Oh, I love that one.
Our raspberry chocolate as one of our more popular ones, because raspberries and chocolate. Sorry, I'm drawing a blank on all the things. I have to like picture them in my head and like, oh yeah, there's that pink one with the white stripes on it. There's a caramel milk chocolate.
You have a salted.
There's a salted caramel as well, bonbon. I think.
A coffee?
12 different ones. Yeah, we have an espresso one.
Yeah, espresso.
I think we've got 12 different flavors of bonbons right now, not including the new ones that are just here for Valentine's Day.
So these little hearts, are they pure chocolate?
No, those are all flavored as well.
Oh, my God.
Okay. We must take a bite. These are cool because this is, I'm looking at this little heart and it is deep saffron color, kind of.
Good description.
With black, it looks like an artist kind of spattered it with some black.
The Jackson paint. Pollock look.
Yeah, it's got the Jackson Pollock look.
We hired Mr. Pollock to come down and do some painting for
smart.
Us.
Yeah. Oh, I think it's like a lime.
A lime?
Like a key lime.
Oh, could very well be.
Yeah.
Like I said, I'm an idiot and got my chart. Mm. They're all brand new, so I haven't memorized them all yet myself, unfortunately.
I like that taste.
Because she just came out with 9 different flavors of hearts.
Wow.
There's only 2. I only brought you 2 flavors there, but we have 9 different flavors of hearts.
Oh, yeah. I like the key lime. What's that one? We're bringing Marilyn in here.
There you go.
I will never turn down chocolate.
She's going to try a lips. So we didn't know what flavor that one. What flavor is your
there you go.
Heart?
I think
good.
I'm getting some coconut in that one. That's delicious.
Well, it might be
Mark.
The coconut pandan.
How about that one, Marilyn? What notes are you picking up?
Citrus for sure. Lime.
Citrus.
What's
cheesecake.
Good combination of sweet and sour.
You know you need to talk into the microphone. I know
sweet
you know
and
that.
Sour.
She's done this before.
We are getting her amped up for the news. Well, we got more here, Marilyn, so you should, you know, because let's say a bonbon isn't your thing and you're looking for something different, you might really go for the freeze-dried strawberry delight.
Wow.
Now, look at this. These look really good. They're like chocolate-dipped strawberries, but they're freeze-dried.
Right, so we freeze-dry all of our own fruits.
Wow.
Those are all sliced, freeze-dried, and they laid out on a platter. And I drizzled stream of dark chocolate and a stream of white chocolate over all the strawberries.
Uh-huh.
And then put them in a little bag for you to enjoy. So you get like a little sweet white chocolate mm-hmm. and a little bitter dark
little
chocolate mixed in there.
With
oh, I didn't see Marilyn over there. There you go. Yeah, this is, I just came out with this one. So this is brand new. I just put this out 2 days ago.
Mm. Oh, really?
Yeah, so it's brand new to our shelves.
Wow.
I like it because it's light, but with just a, you know, a drizzle of chocolate, but it's got that kind of tart fruit taste.
That's addicting. I could eat
a I could eat a lot of those.
Freeze drying is so much fun. It's just the moisture that leaves.
Mm-hmm.
I look at after the freeze drying is done, it drains all the moisture out into a bucket that's frozen. And you look at it, it looks like water.
You can make like fruit
no matter what I do.
Do you need special things to freeze dry, or do you just like
you need a freeze dryer?
Uh-huh. Oh, so you do. You need an actual thing that's called a freeze dryer.
Yeah, it's a tool that.
Mm.
This is a little more than your typical fruit dryer, like I have.
No, this is not dehydrator.
Yeah,
There's a vast difference between a dehydrator, which is what most people have for drying your fruit, your extra peaches, or whatever. This is a freeze dryer. It's a rather expensive machine, about 300 times more expensive than, say, a dehydrator.
Whoa.
Uh-huh.
You can pick up at Home Depot or whatever for
so it actually
20
freezes.
Bucks.
Oh, I really like these strawberries. So I'm going to have another one.
Yeah, the action of the freeze dryer is it has a pump that reduces the atmosphere in the container, in a stainless steel container, by a couple of atmospheres.
Wow.
I don't know.
Then freezes it below 20 degrees.
Okay.
Wow. So what happens is, and the trays themselves are heated a little bit. So what happens is the trays are heated while the walls, it's a stainless steel container, the walls
are frozen,
are sub-zero temperatures. So when you heat something, moisture automatically goes to the coldest part of it.
Mm.
Now, if you take something out of the freezer, what happens to it? It automatically develops a layer of frost on it because it's getting all the moisture from the air, the ambient air in the room.
Wow.
It does the same thing, except we're forcing it by heating up the material a little bit, so it forces all the moisture out and into the sidewalls where it attaches to the sidewall until it's all done. And it takes a couple of days.
How big is this thing? Can you put your employees in it?
Mm, no. Well,
stay young
a piece
forever.
At a time, yes. Do you have an idea?
But really, how big is it? Like, I'm just trying to picture this.
No, it's not big enough to fit Ed. Sorry.
We are.
It's about 2 feet by 3 feet by 2 feet.
Bigger than a bread box.
Bigger than a bread box, for sure.
Mark and I spent some really wonderful evenings in Montreal a few years ago when he had just come back from Europe.
Mondia.
And getting ready to do all this. He was, you know, practicing for
the
chocolate.
It was a beekeeping conference.
Right. Yeah, he had these bags of chocolate that he'd brought back from Europe, and every night we were sitting down and doing
just
a sampling.
Eating chocolate.
It was just one of the best vacations of my life.
And
I also have to say, we're really lucky in Carbondale to just have this, like, quality of bonbons and chocolate that they're making over there at the Cocoa Club. It's pretty unbelievable.
It really is.
Chocolate.
It really is, and that's why we, you know, this man is so busy keeping all these balls in the air. That's because while it's a space, it's a coffee shop, it's, you know, teas, he's creating all these chocolates, he's got to ship, do orders. I mean, it's a lot going on, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw that you also used freeze-dried raspberries.
That's a really special.
Your fruit of cacao.
That is a really special new bar. I just came out with that. I've had the fruit of cacao bar for a while, but I've added freeze-dried raspberries to the top of it. That's my favorite new bar right there. That's my go-to nighttime snack. It's a 70% dark chocolate from Belize, I believe. And fruit of cacao just means inside the husk, the pod of the cocoa, there's a mucilage, it's called, which is like this slimy material that it's very, very sweet, and it's full of sugar. I liken it to liquefied Skittles. That's what it tastes like.
Whoa.
So if you're ever at Origin and someone breaks open a cocoa pod, you will eat the interior of it and spit the seeds out. The seeds are the cocoa, but the seeds don't
bitter,
they taste like grass. They don't taste like chocolate at all. But you want the mucilage inside that's so delicious. So we've taken that, freeze-dried that, and I could sprinkle that on the back of each bar so it it adds another fruity layer up to the chocolate. And then adding the raspberries to it is just like the piece de resistance as it is.
Oh, my God. That's amazing.
Super killer.
I want to hear like your pitch for people that are thinking about buying chocolate and they're like, oh, I can just go to City Market or wherever and pick up like a Hershey's bar.
I'm going to keep eating chocolate while you pitch
good,
this.
Good, you should. That's another new product we have, our Honey Foam Chocolate. This is different from our Honey Foam Bar.
Oh, my God.
This is...
like, you can't buy this.
It's big chunks of Honey Foam dipped in 70% dark chocolate. Those are amazing. The pitch, Brian, would be we ensure that we bring in the highest quality chocolate we can, which is an easy thing to say. Most anybody can say that. But we ensure we are by making sure that our farmers are well taken care of. They're well trained in their craft. They're not just growing fruit and throwing it into a bag and calling it good. They spend many, many months and years training to learn how what the tree looks like. You have to pick cacao within a couple of days on either side of it actually being ripe. And the whole tree isn't like an apple tree where it's usually mostly all ripe at the same time. It also can't be picked with machinery. It has to be hand-picked, because if you just yank it off a tree, it'll never grow in that spot again, thereby lessening the availability of cacao on your tree.
I did not know
I call cacao the princess tree because it requires so many special things, like a lot of moisture but in a well-drained soil. A lot of sunlight but dappled sunlight, so it's a sub-story tree. You can't farm it like you would normally. It doesn't like growing in rows.
And it's got a spiritual element to it, too.
Oh, very much so. It's also insanely good for you. Chocolate is very, very good for you until you water it down with milk and sugar.
Aha.
Exactly.
So 100% cacao is the bomb, but it's really hard to eat, too. Yeah. So we add a little bit of sugar. My jam is 70%. That's pretty much all my chocolate is, 70%, except for the milk chocolates I make for those people that like that in their life.
Well, so the price of chocolate. Let's talk about that.
Oh,
because,
my God.
You know, people don't understand. Sure, you can go get a City Market or Nestle's chocolate bar, if it's really even chocolate. But what you're dealing with is a fluctuating market of getting chocolate.
Yeah. Chocolate is insane right now. A year ago, last January at this time, I could have bought a ton, which is about 8 bags of cacao, like a whole pallet of cacao, for about $2,500. Today, that same pallet is $1,050.
Wow.
I'm sorry, $10,000.
No, I was going to say.
It's $10,000 for that same pallet. So I'm paying, instead of $250 for a bag, I'm paying $1,050 for a bag. For one 70-kilo bag.
Yeah. Wow.
And
what happened?
A drought followed by flooding. In two of the major cacao-growing countries in the world, Cote d'Ivoire and Ghana, 65% of the world's chocolate is grown in those two countries. They suffered devastating drought. That's being blamed on climate change, followed by a devastating flooding, which then what didn't die because it couldn't grow was then degraded because cacao, being a princess tree, doesn't like to be abused, and the water, the flooding just killed it off.
Well, Mark, we're going to have to go real soon, but tell everyone where they can find you, where they can get this chocolate, and when you're open.
I highly recommend you come straight down to the shop. We're at 786 Highway 133, next door to Mana Foods and Tortilleria, across the highway from City Market in Carbondale is the best thing in the Red Rock Plaza.
When are you open?
But you do have a webpage.
We do have a webpage, pollinatorchocolate.com. We are open Monday through Friday, 8 to 5, and weekends 9 to 4.
Awesome.
For all your espresso and chocolate needs.
Thank you,
Yay.
Mark Burrows.
Thank you. What a great way to start Friday. Happy weekend.
This is KDNK, Carbondale Community Access Radio, Glenwood Springs, Carbondale, the Roaring Fork Valley, and beyond.